Meyer's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy and Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by George Dawson. Mr. Dawson is a graduate of Stonier School of Banking and the Harvard University Graduate School of Business Administration. He has worked as a loan officer with three major banks, and since 1985, he has worked for South Texas business owners as a financial consultant, preparing loan packages, building financial models, and negotiating with banks and trade creditors. In addition to running his own consulting business, Mr. Dawson serves on the board of local business and manufacturing associations and is a volunteer small business counselor and a university continuing education instructor. Every service and trades company eventually comes to the place where they need to secure a loan. Today's tape will walk you through the ABCs of what to do and what not to do during the process of making a loan application. You will find Mr. Dawson's comments on today's tape very helpful the next time you try to secure a loan.
Hello. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today about banks and borrowing money. With you and on this tape, I will cover what I think are the three main considerations in picking a bank, which are ownership, safety, and size. And then I want to focus on borrowing money, some dead-end assumptions that borrowers make, seven questions your company will always have to answer when borrowing money, the five qualitative considerations that will concern a bank the most, and finally, how to get your loan renewed. For my purposes, a loan means any type of loan. It can be a line of credit. It could be a long-term loan to buy your building. It could be a medium-term loan to finance inventories or something of that nature. But what I'm going to talk about today applies to all bank loans. It is clear that the economy is growing again, and with our relatively low level of interest rates, businesses in general will be borrowing to expand. There certainly will be a slight improvement in the banking industry's willingness to lend to business, but business borrowers will continue to meet with some lingering reluctance on the part of the banks to lend at all. Many bankers are still like the cat who sat on a hot stove and after that never sat on a stove again, whether it was hot or cold. I also believe that based on very rigorous application, documentation, and approval processes that are in place at the banks, credit-qualified borrowers, that is, companies that have the capacity to repay new borrowings, will be turned down. And they will be turned down for one of two reasons. One, they have failed to establish their credibility and win the confidence of the loan officer. Or two, the amount of work on the part of the loan officer to analyze and process the loan request is just not justified by the amount or the size of the loan request. In other words, it looks like too much work for too small a loan. So today you will find bankers more interested in following the rules, in making collaborative or committee-type decisions, taking longer to make decisions, less willing to offer advice and counsel, and addicted to acquiring more and more information about their borrowers. You must be willing to invest time and effort into building and maintaining contact with lenders. It is another job of management. It may be a pain in the assets, but it must be done. Borrowers must look out for themselves. The banker may be friendly, but he or she is not your friend. You are responsible for the borrowing side of the relationship, and they are responsible for the lending side of the relationship. And note that I used the word relationship. That may not be correct anymore. Certainly it is a desired description, but transaction may be a much more accurate term. The banker's world has changed very dramatically, and particularly in the past 5 years. they have lost a very stable, very predictable, and controlled operating environment. The opportunity to make an error has never seemed greater to them, and the consequences of an error have never been more severe. All they have to do is look at the savings and loan industry as a horrible example. Many banks state that they are interested in making business loans, but I assure you they have no intention of repeating the past few years. It is critical that borrowers clearly demonstrate why they need to use the bank's depositors' money in their business and avoid hurting their chances of getting a loan by making dead-end assumptions. And these dead-end assumptions lead the borrower to approach the lender in the wrong way, or to make an incorrect presentation, or simply to say the wrong things. Let's look briefly at six of these assumptions. Number one, the bank has to make business loans. That is not so. There are personal loans for cars and houses, investment securities, loans to other banks and to security dealers. Business loans have never been the only game in town, and there is lots of competition for the banker's attention. The second assumption is that the bank wants to make business loans, and they want to lend to my kind of business. Often, that is not so. Even if the bank wants to lend money generally, you may not be the kind of loan they want to make right at this moment. Whole industry sectors like energy, construction, office buildings, and construction move in and out of popularity. Or the bank may not want to concentrate any more money or risk in your kind of business. They may want to lend, but just not to you. So picking the right bank is a key to success. The third assumption is that the banker understands my business. This is absolutely not so. He may or may not have a general knowledge of your industry and may have lent to a company like yours. But your business is as unique as you are. And the smaller you are, the more unique you are. You must assume that the loan officer knows nothing about your business and has little motivation to learn. It is your obligation to fully educate the banker on your business, and it is your goal to turn that loan officer into an informed advocate for your loan at their bank. You need to find out how loans are approved at the bank and learn if your request exceeds the loan officer's authority. How many other people have to say yes before you can get your loan? In one of our smallest and in one of the largest banks in my town, the loan officers have no authority at all. You never deal with the ultimate decision maker. That makes it hard to get an answer in a hurry, so plan ahead. Never be a last-minute borrower. Start all major transactions weeks ahead of time. The fourth assumption is that you increase your chances by presenting your loan request to a number of banks at the same time. Again, this is not so. And don't put pressure on the bank that you have someone else interested in making your loan. This is seriously a wrong move to make. The bank will run a credit bureau check. It will turn up a borrower shopping several banks at the same time. Banks clearly appreciate loyalty. The desperate appearing, pressuring, and shopping borrower makes for a very easy no. Fifth assumption, all the banker needs to understand is that increasing our sales will solve the company's temporary cash flow problems. This is definitely not so. In the past 33 years, I have seen only one company where this has been true. This assumption that more sales will solve our problems is usually a major red flag for the bank that the borrower does not understand their company's cash flow drivers and cash flow patterns. And the sixth assumption is, let's talk banker terminology. Let's use the term working capital a lot in the conversation. Tell the banker that's what you want the money for. Tell the banker the loan will be repaid out of working capital. This is not so unless you are in the snowblower or the bikini business. To a banker, working capital loans usually mean a temporary, often seasonal imbalance in the relationship of current assets and current liabilities. However, in my experience, working capital is too often a polite code word that the borrower uses to mean, I'm losing money, and I want the bank to subsidize the loss. Never forget that with bankers and most other bureaucrats, you are dealing with rational personalities, linear thinkers, control-oriented people. They want to see records, computer financial models, plans, controls, alternatives, costs, profit analysis. Learn their language and their needs so you can get what you need. It's a selling job. And besides the banks, you should explore non-bank sources of financing. Long-term loans for fixed assets are available from several non-bank lenders, such as the Money Store, ITT&T Finance, and so on. In my town of San Antonio, you can buy a building with 10% down over 25 years and pay less than prime plus 2%. How do you do that? You do that through the city local development company and cooperating banks. So look at the special financing programs in your own community. Find out what your local leasing companies and receivable factoring companies are offering when you need funds for growth. I have found leasing sources for equipment costing as little as $2,000 and firms that will finance a specialized computer manufacturer's purchase of parts. Cash has always been king in managing a business, and now cash flow is king in evaluating a loan application. So if you cannot show and explain how cash moves through your business, if you do not prepare and maintain cash flow forecasts as a regular business practice, if you do not have procedures in place to monitor receivables and payables and inventory levels and capital expenditures, you and your business are behind the power curve and you are fading. Collateral still remains an important but secondary source of repayment after excess cash flow from profitable operations. And I have to tell you that unsecured loans are the hardest kinds of loans to find. But the loan value of the collateral, that is what the bank thinks it can get by taking it and selling it, has been marked down substantially from past practices. You are dealing with bankers who have relearned the truism that I learned 30 years ago, that the collateral is always there, except when you need it. The burden of proof is on you, the borrower, to support the loan value, which is not the initial cost and which is not the replacement cost of the collateral pledged. There is a story, by the way, of two contractors who met at a training program, and they were going through the usual get acquainted talk, like what do you do and where do you live and how long have you been in the contracting business. And they discovered that they not only had the same bank, but they borrowed from the same bank, and they both had the same loan officer, Officer George. And one of the contractors said, did you know that George has a glass eye? And his new friend responded, no, not really. Which one is it? It's the left eye. How can you tell? Because that is the eye with the hint of compassion in it. Now let's talk about picking a bank to work with. Within its marketplace, a bank can choose to emphasize retail lending with car loans and house mortgage loans, and it can take very little interest in loans to local businesses. I'm aware of one local bank that refuses to make business loans. Other banks take a geographic approach and make loans to both businesses and individuals in the bank's market area. Banks can specialize to serve particular market niches, such as military personnel, tobacco farmers, or manufacturers. Even banks serving the same market differ widely in their approach due to different management preference for risk or different business lending skills. Some banks are more conservative than others or prefer to do business with certain types of borrowers. And in large cities, specialized small business banks have been started in the past few years to target specifically local businesses and very high net worth individuals. So selecting a bank for your business will take some time and work on your part, but it's not a terribly complicated task. However, too many businesses leave the selection of a lending bank until the time they need to borrow. But then the pressure is on because cash is needed, and a hurried, time-wasteful search begins. First of all, when evaluating a bank, ignore bank advertising, which is aimed almost entirely at the individual consumer market. Bank business loan advertising is vague and not a true indicator of the bank's interest or ability to make a loan to your business. It is a good indicator that the bank's marketing department has money to spend. Some of the best business lending banks don't advertise at all. They get all the business they want from satisfied customer referrals. As a borrower, you should be interested in three things: a bank's safety, its ownership, its lending capacity, or its size. Let's talk about safety. Concern that you should have is not for your deposits, but safety for your loans. Your deposits below $100,000 are safe with the FDIC's Bank Insurance Fund. However, you do not want to be a borrower at a weak bank. A weak bank manages its loan portfolio to pacify the banking regulators, which means taking on only the best quality new borrowers and selectively trying to chase off existing borrowers. Trying to turn a money-losing bank around is like trying to U-turn an aircraft carrier. It is a large task. There is lots of downhill momentum to be reversed. It requires the full attention of most of the hands. So the bank concentrates on fixing the problem, or what they call the weaker credits. And moreover, even the quality borrower comes under closer review because the bank fears more losses. Lower quality borrowers will feel pressure to either upgrade their loans with more collateral and financial reporting, or move their loans to another lender. At the bank, very simple administrative details like mailing out statements or returning phone calls are neglected. Documents, files, letters, contracts are missing or misfiled. There is a high degree of loan officer turnover and account reassignment. It becomes almost impossible for current borrowers to get additional credit. New policies and procedures are set up, and there is a constant fear of making mistakes. Everything takes much longer as more people are consulted in every decision. Tempers are shorter and personnel less accommodating and more rule-bound. My advice for top quality borrowers is to move to a sounder bank. You do not need the inevitable delay, paralysis, and inconvenience that sets into a troubled bank. If you cannot easily move your loan to another bank, then by all means, you should avoid drawing attention to yourself while you try to set up a move. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, and the obvious weak credit gets attention first. So don't be obvious. Don't overdraw your checking accounts. Don't be late with any loan payments. Don't be late with any promised financial statements or reports. Return the banker's phone calls promptly. Be pleasant, upbeat, and friendly when you are in the bank. You want to be a pleasant non-problem. Like the swimming duck, you want to be tranquil and serene on the surface and paddling like crazy out of sight as you work to line up another lender. How can you tell if your bank is safe? On an informal basis, there is usually some level of conversation in the business community about a bank pulling in its horns, calling loans, or turning down new borrowers. In some communities, the local newspapers take an interest and report on the condition of the local banks. A shortcut to this analysis is to purchase bank current quarterly rating reports from commercial reporting firms. There are three of these firms: VeriBank, which its phone number is 800-837-4226, Sheshanoff Information at 800-546-2340, and Bauer at 800-388-6686. Each of these firms offers somewhat of a different level of reporting, and their fees for a report on a bank's safety range from $10 to $25 per report. Bank ownership. The smaller the business, the more critical are the issues of bank ownership. because unlike the large company, smaller businesses usually have no banking choices outside of their community. Ownership of a bank is extremely important because it drives fundamental loan policy issues. A locally owned bank with local business people on the board of directors is much more likely to respond to the needs of your business. All of that bank's eggs are in one basket, your community, and that basket gets a lot of attention. Out-of-town ownership, especially a large super-regional banking chain, has a different set of priorities. These organizations must responsibly optimize shareholder values. This means moving assets and deposits around within the banking chain's markets. It means focusing on those geographic areas and products that bring the highest return to the total organization. Your community might not provide the best returns available and be left out in the cold by the big bank. Your local bank has no choice. It cannot direct its attention elsewhere. It has to serve the local market. It is more difficult for the chain banks to customize products for each marketplace and still have economies of processing size. There is a tendency to make one size fits all. The large chains are more reluctant to make policy and procedure exceptions. And when the person authorized to make an exception is hundreds of miles away, it's very difficult to plead your case. With the out-of-states, there is a human tendency to favor the home base of the chain over the provinces in discretionary budget matters, and especially in hard times. So the opera company in the headquarters town still might get money from the bank, but the United Way in your town can get cut back. Local bank ownership can take a longer-term point of view and is more consistent in their relationship with the community, not necessarily because they're nicer, but because they have no other choices, and they cannot avoid the direct personal and social pressure from the community. Local banks are not perfect either. There is less privacy as a borrower because the board of directors reviews more of the loans at a local bank than at a chain bank. Check out a bank's board ahead of time. Are any board members competitors of yours, suppliers of yours, customers of yours, social acquaintances? Do you care if they know all about your company? Look at the checks your major customers give you. Where do they bank? Look at the endorsement on the back of the checks that you pay to your suppliers. Where do they bank? Banking with your customers allows you to collect your money faster. Banking with your suppliers lets them collect from you faster. Who are the officers of the bank? Have they been there for a while? Do you see them at meetings of business people? Do you see them in leadership positions within the community? Does the board of directors have vigorous business people in touch with the realities of your community, or are they antiques? Can you relate to the board members? Do you respect them? As a non-borrower, this issue of ownership is less important. But the larger the bank, the less important you will be. The less important you are, the more you will have to accept whatever it is that you are given. Lending capacity. Does the bank have the capacity and willingness to lend to companies of your size and in your industry? The bank may be too small for your borrowing. Each bank has a legal lending limit, the maximum amount that it is allowed by banking regulations to lend to any one borrower. This limit is 15% of capital surplus and undivided profits. You can take the bank statement of conditions, find these items, add them up, and make the calculation. More simply, you can ask the bank's cashier or a loan officer. But then ask what the bank's loan policy calls for as a maximum loan to any one borrower. An internal policy limit exists in most banks, and it could be as little as 50% of their legal lending limit. And it is a rare borrower who is permitted to borrow a bank's full legal limit. So my rule of thumb is as follows. Figure out what you think the maximum amount of money your business will need to borrow for all purposes, trucks, equipment, lines of credit, etc., in the reasonable future. Double that amount and then divide by 75% and deal only with a bank who has a loan limit of that size. Because just as you always want to have some reserve borrowing power for your business, you always want your bank to have some reserve lending power to your business. Now, while a bank may have the capacity to lend to your business, it may not have the willingness to lend. Banks want a diversified loan portfolio. They want to avoid over-concentration in one type of business or one sector of the economy. A bank may decide that it has reached the dollar limit of all of the hotel-motel loans it wishes to carry. Your proposal for a hotel-motel loan may be just fine, but there's no room left at the bank for you. Other types of loans, commercial real estate, oil and gas loans, require special lending skills, and many banks don't have the knowledge to make these loans. On the positive side, other banks, usually the larger ones, do make an effort to develop specific industry lending skills. Geography affects a bank's willingness to lend. Only the largest banks lend to distant customers, and these customers are in turn usually giants within their own industry. Your small to medium-sized business is in Illinois, and you own land in Montana. Typically, the Illinois banks don't want Montana land as collateral, and Montana banks don't want to lend to a business in Illinois. A bank's willingness to lend can simply reflect also the personal preferences of its management, and they can border on the irrational, such as limiting loans to a 3-mile radius around the bank. We call these drive-by loans. They want to be able to drive by your loan on the way to work and make sure that you are still at work and not having a good time in Mexico or some other place. Banks can have a very personal loan policy, refusing to deal with certain businesses that management simply does not like or does not approve of, such as an adult bookstore or a massage parlor. Size is important in picking a bank. Larger banks provide a wider and more sophisticated range of services. If you are doing business internationally, most small and medium banks are not able to help you. Larger banks offer domestic and international cash management services to help you rapidly collect the money paid by your customers and to invest that extra cash in your accounts on an overnight basis. The bank's trust department can help you manage and invest your increasing wealth and later, after you die, administer your estate. A bank with multiple branches in your city will be more convenient if your business has multiple locations. Large banks organize their lending officers by customer size, by customer industry, or by geography. These banks can focus on specific industries and develop excellent customized loans, cash management, and other support services for their large customers. If you are a smaller business borrower, and the cutoff size varies from bank to bank, you will be assigned to a special small business banking department. It probably won't be called small business banking, but that's what it is. Large banks have recently rediscovered small business banking. This happens periodically in the industry, and so for those of us with long memories, it is not too exciting. Neither, and this is important, is it an exciting career path for many loan officers assigned to the small loan department. The way to the top, to the big salary, to the big desk, and to the prestige is away from, not in, small business banking. These departments often have a high officer turnover rate, and borrowers face a never-ending process of educating another new account officer. Unless you need specialized industry-based loan deposit and non-credit services, or unless your loan requirements are too large, you should be doing business with a medium to smaller, locally owned bank. The quality and personal attention of the bank's credit department and credit reporting service is important if you are selling to other businesses. It is this department that will respond when other banks call on behalf of your vendors to check out your credit. It is this department that can help you check out the quality of businesses applying for trade credit with you. So evaluate a bank on 4 points. Safety. Safety directly affects bank loan policy. Avoid a bank in trouble. Determine if its capital and earnings power is sufficient. Can it afford to be a consistent and dependable lender? Ownership. Ownership determines business priorities and community focus. Is the bank locally owned by responsible investors? Are local business owners on the board of directors? Should you worry about privacy? Lending capacity. This is both the ability and the willingness to lend. Is the bank's legal lending limit large enough? Is the bank willing to lend to your kind of business? Are your borrowing needs too small to interest the bank? Are you in the bank's geographic market? And finally, size, which determines the range of services available and your relative importance to the bank. Do you need cash management services, branch locations, or personal investment advice? Do you want to have a personal banking relationship, or are you transaction-oriented? Now, I can't take you through all of the elements of making an effective loan proposal in the remaining time, but let me talk very briefly about the 7 questions that must be answered as part of any loan request. Let me frame my remarks in this portion as if I were, and as I am now really, talking to the owner-manager of a closely held business. Okay, let's talk about the 7 questions that you will have to answer anytime you go to borrow money, and from anyone who lends money. The first question is, how much money do you want? Ask for exactly the amount you need. No low ball or high ball stuff. If you ask for too much and get cut back, it suggests that you don't know your costs or that you have some hidden agenda you don't want the bank to know about. The banker didn't fall off the turnip truck this morning. They've seen this play before, and it can make them irritable, and it makes the borrower look sneaky. Well, then ask for less than you need and plan to make it go further. This play doesn't work either. Today, it's almost mandatory to turn away the borrower who clearly does not understand their true borrowing needs. And suppose you did ask for less than you need, and suppose that you did get it, that means that you got enough to get yourself into trouble. Then you have to go back to the bank for a loan increase. And that makes you and the loan officer both look dumb, and the loan officer will not enjoy going back to committee for additional money, and the loan officer will remember the borrower who made him do it. It is perfectly okay to put in an allowance for contingencies in your loan proposal, but do it openly and explain how you arrived at this amount. The second question is, what are you going to do with the loan? There are only 4 things you can do with a loan. 1 is pay off another loan. 2nd thing is pay off an equity investor or a partner. 3rdly, you can pay for expenses needed to increase revenues. And lastly, you can use the money to acquire assets. Give the banker lots of detail on how you plan to spend the loan. Provide your construction estimates, equipment prices and quotes, vendors' names, and so on. If you plan to increase inventory or accounts receivable, don't say working capital, show how much your inventory and receivables will increase and why. The 3rd question is, why is this loan good for your business? How will this loan help you to increase operating revenue or to operate more efficiently and profitably? And again, be very specific and very detailed and show what you expect to happen. Bankers like to make productive loans. They like to make loans that will increase revenues and create new jobs. The 4th question is, why do you need our depositors' money to do this? Well, of course you need the depositors' money because you don't have enough money of your own. But are you profitable? Do you have a down payment or equity in the proposal? Can the amount you are asking for be supported by your business? Have you spent past profits well and reinvested them in the business? Is there some problem in your business that's creating the borrowing needs? Do you recognize the problem? And do you have a solution? It's not very hard to tell if a business is operating efficiently simply by using your financial statements and comparative industry statistics. And the banker does not want to finance an inefficient operator, someone who carries too much inventory, or does not collect accounts receivable effectively, or has excess space or excess equipment. Bankers place a lot of emphasis on comparative statistics, and this comparing of the financial performance of your business to industry-wide averages, or better yet, to businesses of similar size and similar markets, is quite common in almost any loan analysis.
You need to be able to explain both the good and the bad differences between your performance and that of your industry or peer group businesses. Fifth question is, when will you pay it back? Is it a short-term or a long-term loan? So be certain to build the repayment schedule into the financial projections that are part of your loan proposal. Many borrowers fail to recognize that a growing business requires additional cash to feed that growth of more inventory or more receivables or more space or more trucks. I tell my clients that growth is a cash hog. Growth eats cash. It is the rare business that can create enough profits in the short term to finance its growth. Permanent additions to inventory or receivables should be financed long term and repaid from excess cash flow after profitable operations in just the same way that you would finance a new building. Banks have become extremely careful about what we call maturity matching, that is, matching the intended use of the money or the intended use of the loan with the term of repayment. There is no more endlessly rolling of 90-day notes. The sixth question is, how will you pay it back? Well, since there are only four things you can do with a loan, don't be surprised that there are only four ways you can repay a loan. The first way is with another loan. This is usually called the greater fool theory. You can repay a loan with an equity investment in your company. You can sell company assets. Sometimes we call this repossession. And the fourth one is excess cash flow from profitable operations. And if the source is excess cash flow from profitable operations, what is your past profit history? And where is your cash flow projection for the next 12 months and for 2 years after that? You must show, based not only upon your past performance, but also on estimates of your future performance, that you can repay the debt. The major limiting factor on how much a business can borrow is its ability to service the debt. That is, how much excess cash flow from operations is there to make principal and interest payments. And each business has its own specific, measurable debt repayment capacity. A cash flow projection is the most rational way to analyze the factors that create and use cash in your business, and it provides a basis for discussion with the bank. Cash flow is truly of interest to the bankers now. So if you can't lay out clearly how cash has moved through your business for the past 3 years, don't go to the bank until you have all the numbers laid out clearly, neatly, and accurately. And lenders put a lot of emphasis on the quality of your financial statements and records. But you, the business owner, need to be in control of the assumptions that go into preparing the financial projections. The bank loses confidence real fast in the business owner who says, "I don't really understand those projections. My accountant put them together." Well, is your accountant going to guarantee the loan? The seventh question is, what happens if something goes wrong and you can't pay it back? The traditional answer is the collateral and the personal loan guarantees. If the bank is asking for your personal guarantee, understand what it is that you are guaranteeing. Are you guaranteeing the whole principal amount, or the deficiency between the loan amount and a desired loan value of collateral, or a percent of the outstanding balance, or something else? This is all negotiable. what the bank suggests at first is not what they always have to have? Will the guarantee reduce over the life of the loan? Can personal collateral be substituted for a general guarantee? What specific set of events trigger the guarantee? Must the business be liquidated before the guarantee is available, and so on? So before you approach the bank, know that a guarantee is likely and figure out ahead of time what is acceptable or not acceptable to you. To create, by the way, a better impression and improve your chances of getting the loan, show as part of your proposal that you have figured out the kinds of things that can go wrong. Show that you understand how these things could hurt your company and how you would deal with them. Business people are, for the most part, positive. Bankers are trained to be doubtful and cautious. You know the risks of your business much better than the banker does. You can estimate the likelihood of these problems happening and explain your options to correct the problem or to minimize the damage. Now, these seven questions may not be asked all at once or in these exact words, but they will be asked. It is essential that you have answers to these questions before you approach a bank, even for the most preliminary conversation. My clients and I, in fact, practice before we go to the bank. A few comments in our introductory presentation that covers all of the seven questions. If you ask a banker how his or her world is different today than 10 years ago, the banker will tell you about poor economic conditions, about overworked and hostile regulators, about customers that file lawsuits, about antagonistic juries, embarrassing publicity, fraudulent borrowers, unhappy shareholders, unsympathetic public, apathetic employees, and so on. Your banker does need some healthy outdoor recreation. I think you should probably know about the three boyhood pals who, after they became adults, still went fishing together at least one day a year. And as they grew up, their careers had diverged, and of course one was a banker, another had become a minister, and the third was a professional gambler. And this year for their outing, they chose to go saltwater fishing. And as they were heading out from the shore, the engine on their rented boat exploded. Now, the boat was undamaged beyond the loss of power, except that the explosion also knocked out the radio. And the currents were strong, and the boat was, in fact, being swept out to sea. There was one point of land that they would be carried past, and a strong swimmer could make it from the boat to the shore and then notify the Coast Guard to rescue the remaining two in the boat. There was just one problem. They were shark fishing, and the water was full of them. It was a convention of jaws. And the gambler, who was the best swimmer, declined to go. He said, "Look, fellas, I make my living on the odds and knowing when to take a chance and when not to. And with all those sharks in the water, I think the odds are best if I stay with the boat." And the minister also declined. He said, "It says in the Bible, 'Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God.' And I know the Lord will deliver me, and I will trust in him and remain on the boat and not tempt him with shark-infested waters." But the banker dove right into the water and struck out for the point of land. And fins showed up from all over the place, and they all converged on the swimming banker. But instead of attacking him, they formed two neat rows on each side of him and escorted him to shore. And he climbed out, waved at his buddies, and headed off in search of the Coast Guard. "My brother," said the preacher to the gambler, "truly we are blessed. Not only have we been delivered, but in our lifetimes we have witnessed the power of the Lord. We have truly seen a miracle." And the gambler replied, "That was no miracle. That was professional courtesy." Now, while the seven questions are logical and objective, you will also meet the five C's of credit, which are more subjective, but equally essential to making the credit decision. The five C's are character, capacity, conditions, collateral, and capital. Let's start with character. Can you be trusted? Are you willing to pay your debts? In the closely held corporation, personal and commercial credit checks will be ordered on the owner and on the business. Order a credit report on your business and on yourself before you go to the bank. I'm sure over half of you will find something wrong. Get it corrected so you don't have to explain it to the bank later when you apply for a loan. Don't leave any assets or debts off of your personal or business financial statements that you prepare for the bank. It is an act of fraud, and you are labeled a liar when it is discovered, and you may lose certain protections under the law in the event of bankruptcy. Business priorities show up in your personal financial statements. Is your business cash-starved because you have personal luxury assets and lots of grown-up toys? In tough times, would you place yourself or your business first? Are you a parasite or a nutrient for your business? Perhaps your business is profitable and you have been drawing out a reasonable salary, but your personal financial statement shows little net worth and noticeable personal debts. Are you or your spouse a spendthrift, a habitual gambler? Has your income been going for the support of aged parents or a handicapped child? The lender will want to know. The moment the bank loses confidence in the borrower or suspects the quality of the borrower's character, the party is over and the bank starts looking for a way out of the loan. The second C is called capacity. What talents, skills, education, experience, ambition, drive, energy, commitment, and contacts do you bring to the business? Why will you survive when so many others before you have failed? Part of the folklore of banking is that most business owners are not good business people. You are seen as good at selling or manufacturing or repairing or some other basic trade skill. You are not seen as being good at putting it all together and running a business. And let me emphasize again that bankers are trained to look at your business through its numbers first and then to look at what is behind the numbers. So what I'm saying is that a historical personal resume is not enough. This type of resume is called the boxes I have lived in approach. Instead, emphasize and describe your business skills, your experience, and the technical knowledge you have that is necessary for success in your line of business. The banker also wants to know about your management team, so include your accountant, attorney, and insurance agent in the loan proposal information. Show the banker that you know how to run your business. Have you identified and can you communicate the key success factors for your business? What are the things that have to be done day in and day out to succeed? What are the things that separate the profitable and successful companies in your field from all the others? What are your measurement and tracking systems? Are you counting what counts? What are your reward and recognition systems? I have to tell you that it was really scary to talk to a customer who was borrowing money from my bank and who had just finished a great year with their company and get a blank stare when you asked, "Well, how did you do that? How did you make it happen? What will you do this coming year?" You must convince the bank that you have a plan to grow and to be profitable. I never met a consistently successful business owner who could not explain the key success factors of their business. I tried never to lend to someone who couldn't explain their key success factors to me. If you don't understand and can't describe the key success factors, how can you manage them? You have failed the capacity test. The third C is conditions. These are larger factors that you cannot control, but to which you must respond. Conditions can be hard to quantify, and so the banker's negative imagination goes into high gear. You need to identify and explain those economic and industry and competitive conditions that impact your business. What events and trends will help, and what can hurt you? What will be your options to respond? Conditions could include the development of substitute products, new competitors, rerouting of streets, or a new theme park coming to town. Are there dominant suppliers or dominant customers who can significantly impact on your business? A banker sees risk in a business owner too tightly focused on the present and unaware of the external factors influencing their business. Capacity along with conditions have always been my two favorite qualitative measures. When I was a loan officer 10 years ago, these two C's of credit were where I identified the winners. The fourth C is collateral. Collateral is the risk reducer. It is not the main source of repayment. Loans are repaid by excess cash flow from profitable operations. Well, what is the value of your collateral in a liquidation sale? And who would buy this collateral from the bank after you have gone out of business? What does the bank do with used equipment or desks or computers? Who wants to buy a building that has been remodeled to fit the specific needs of your type of business? It is your challenge to maximize the loan value of the collateral in the lender's eyes. The better the quality and the value of your collateral, the more you can borrow, the fewer restrictions that will be placed on your company, and perhaps the lower your interest rates. And let me digress for a minute and talk about interest rates. What you are going to pay for that loan. This is a real hot button with many borrowers, when in reality, for most of us, it should be of fairly secondary importance. Why do I say this? Well, first of all, Uncle Sam shares in your interest cost because it is a tax-deductible expense. Secondly, interest rates are pretty much the same from bank to bank. So the banker knows you're not going to get a radically different deal down the street. Finally, if a swing in interest rates of 3 or 4 points will significantly impact your profitability or business health, then don't borrow. Why not? Because you cannot control interest rates. I certainly would not trust the fate of my business to the government's ability to manage the level of interest rates over the business cycle. The inmates are in charge of that particular asylum. Interest rates are negotiable within a fairly narrow range. The rate you don't pay, however, on the loan you don't get is pretty irrelevant. As a business person, you can do three things to lower your loan interest rates. First, you can keep idle money on deposit at the bank. This has an opportunity cost involved, and your accountant can help you figure out if it is worthwhile or not. Usually, it is not. Secondly, you can become a complete customer of the bank. Give them all of your business, both personal and business. I think every borrower should have a backup bank and split their business between the banks if at all possible. So you might have to give up this method. And third and last, you can work to reduce the banker's perception of risk in the loan to your business. And lowering this perception of risk is what an outstanding loan presentation does for you. Now back to collateral. The value of your assets to you as a going business will always be more than the loan value placed on them by the lender. What is the loan value of your assets? Well, it all depends upon the assets themselves, the type of business, the health of your industry, and the bank involved. It's a judgment call, and you should work to influence the banker's judgment. Show the banker how to establish value, how to sell the collateral, and how much could be expected from the sale. The borrower needs to help the banker with this industry-specific information. Get objective support for your asset's marketability and value, and this will give you a better valuation for collateral purposes. I was told of a banker who, after a few moments' conversation with a loan applicant, always asks, "If I had to liquidate your company, how do you suggest that I go about it?" Now, I don't recommend including a liquidation strategy in your loan proposal, but please understand that this is a real question in the banker's mind. The fifth C is capital. what is your financial commitment to the business? Again, another judgment call, the right amount of capital for your company. Banks consider the reliability of earnings, your management capacity, the growth trends of your company, and comparative statistics for other companies in your industry. They form an opinion of your personal and your financial commitment to the company. Your investment in the business is weighed against the amount invested by others, that is, your creditors. Are you asking the bank to have more at risk in the company than you do? Is there enough of a capital cushion to see the company through if something goes wrong? There is your money in the business and OPM, other people's money in the business. And this ratio of total debt divided by equity is one of the major measures of capital adequacy. Just this week, I was talking to a potential client, and he told me that he had $100,000 in assets and that he owed his bank $500,000. And I said, now let me understand this. You got $100,000 in assets and you owe the bank $500,000. And he said, that's right. I said, wow, that's tough. How do you sleep at night? And he replied, just like a baby, I wake up every 2 hours crying. I've talked a lot about the importance of financial projections because I am a numbers kind of person. But I also understand that dollars have little personality and can be hard to reality test. So you need to give your numbers some life or use an alternative base of expressing them. So if you are showing a 6% projected sales increase, tell me or tell the banker how much of that will come from new customers, how much from increased sales to existing customers, how much in your new product line, or from a new merchandising concept, and so on. And then support these projections with historical data or market share data or your experience with other new products or other new campaigns. There are other ways to feed the banker's hunger for data and make your loan request stand out from all others. You would not believe the number of internal reports that banks create. So if you have some nifty internal management reports that help you track inventory or schedule employees or analyze sales patterns or track profitability, then include sample reports and explanations of them as an appendix in your loan proposal. It helps reinforce your position as a professional business manager. I know that we got a line of credit for a client of mine because we showed his internal work in progress reports, and we showed his analysis of the gross margin profitability of each job as part of the loan package. These 5 points of loan evaluation, character, capacity, conditions, collateral, and capital are all part of a banker's basic conditioning. My first bank employer thought these 5 C's should be tattooed on all loan officers. I won't go that far, but impress these points in your mind and build them into your loan request. Let's talk now about planning your loan renewal. You've completed your loan, you've received your money, and now you can forget about banking for a while, or if it's a line of credit, for at least a year. And if borrowing was an unpleasant experience, you plan to forget about banks for a long time. We need to understand that the smart business owner begins to prepare for the loan renewal or the next loan the day after the first loan is made. For most businesses, bank borrowing is a major and a continuing source of funds. And the bank is under no obligation to renew your loan. If you don't have a pledge to renew your loan in writing, you have nothing. And banks very rarely give out such written agreements. Whatever might have been discussed about renewing your loan was just that, discussion, not binding promises. Things change. Economic, competitive, and technological forces are always at work. Credit quality rarely remains unchanged, and banks want the flexibility to get out of a loan situation that they think might go or is going bad. and they want the flexibility to change loan policies or to establish new credit criteria. So you could be invited to move your loan to another lender at renewal, or your later request for increased borrowings could trigger a turndown on the increase and an invitation to leave. Surely banks don't really do such things. Oh, yes, they do. And the primary causes, both of which you can influence, are a deterioration in the borrower's creditworthiness or a loss of confidence in the borrower. Now, there are some positive actions you need to take and then some things to avoid in building a sound and lasting borrowing relationship. On the positive side, always tell the truth. Be open and honest. Nothing destroys trust faster than an uncovered lie, even a small one. Never surprise the banker with bad news. If you see some trouble for your business developing, keep the banker informed and up to date. This helps build confidence, and it gets the banker more on your team. Remember that there is always someone looking over your banker's shoulder, and it is very embarrassing for your lender to have to explain unexpected bad news to this person looking over their shoulder. Make only promises you intend to keep, and keep all the promises that you make. This helps maintain your credibility. The banker would rather have you tell him why a payment might be late than have you explain why a promised payment was not made. Work at keeping the lines of communication open with your banker. You need to be constantly educating the banker about your business. Get your banker out to see your business at least once a year. Let him see that it is more than just a clean place. Introduce the bookkeeper or the accountant. Show off some of your methods like approving new credit, monitoring and collecting customer accounts receivable, some of your product quality controls, employee training programs, and so on. Again, this will help your loan officer be an informed advocate for your business within their bank's credit approval process. Refer other businesses to your bank, but be careful. Someone you refer to the bank indirectly represents you. If this business that you refer is not of the highest quality, it can hurt your reputation by association. So don't refer weak companies or deadbeats. Make sure that you carefully follow any agreements you have made regarding the level of deposit balances to keep in your accounts. These balances on deposit help raise the profitability of your loan to the bank, and they were taken into account and the setting of your loan interest rate. It is necessary further to meet all agreed due dates for the delivery to the bank of financial statements, accounts receivable aging, inventory reports, and so on. This is all part of keeping the promises that you have made. More importantly, the bank is interested in closely analyzing this information to detect any loan problems as soon as possible. The sooner a weakening credit is identified, the more choices the bank has to deal with the situation and to protect against loss. Also, very rarely is a borrower late with these reports when the results are good. So being late, even if the results are good, makes the banker think you are putting off bad news. Make a good impression. Have your statements and reports neat and accurate. You are dealing, again, with a numbers-oriented person. Your financial results will be compared to the projections and budgets that you included in your loan proposal. So set up your reports so this comparison can be easily seen. You gain credibility when you hit your projections or provide reasonable explanations for misses. It is a great investment of time to review. It is a great investment of time to review your financials and other schedules before sending them to the bank. Then if your banker calls with any questions, you can answer them right on the spot and again build confidence and credibility within the bank. Now there are a number of mistakes that borrowers make, and they're not all directly related to the loan, but they all hurt their chances for a renewal or make it difficult to increase their borrowings. These mistakes cause the banker to worry and lose confidence in the borrower. And again, once confidence is lost, all is lost. Overdrawing your accounts and writing checks against uncollected funds are major irritants. Borrowers often mistakenly have an unconcerned attitude about managing their checking accounts. After all, you cover the overdrafts, and few, if any, of your customers' checks have ever bounced. The banker sees it differently. Shrinking bank deposits are one of the early warning signs of a business having problems. A regular appearance on these lists marks you as a sloppy business person and creates concern that other elements of your business are being mishandled as well. Worse than the overdraft list is the list of overdue loan interest and principal repayments. This is a bright red flag that the loan may be in trouble. It is a list of borrowers who have not kept their promise to the bank. It is a list reviewed at the time of a bank examination, and the bank examiners demand an explanation from the loan officer for borrowers on their assigned list of accounts. It may be not a big deal to you as a borrower that your payment will be made a week late. After all, your customers often pay you late. It's a real big deal at the bank. Thanks to computers, this lateness is noted and listed immediately and reviewed daily by senior level management. Don't hide and make the loan officer call to ask about late interest and principal payments. Call the officer before it happens with an explanation and tell him when you will make the payment. Then your loan officer will have the facts when his boss asks about your payment. Appear on the list on this list often enough or long enough, and your loan will get a special loan review. And you don't want this to happen. Your loan could be downgraded. You will be asked to submit more reports on your business. You will be watched more closely. You could be asked to provide more collateral. Or you could be asked to move your loan somewhere else. So let me give you some of my conclusions. First of all, make borrowing your last choice, not your first choice. You really do not want the lender looking over your shoulder. You don't want to be constantly educating someone. You don't want to be dependent upon someone else for the cash needed to run your operation. But if you must borrow, understand that for the rest of this decade, at least, it will be more difficult for the typical business to get bank financing. Not because the banks don't have money to lend, but because of intense pressures, internal and external, on the banks to lend soundly and cautiously. The successful borrower knows that selling never stops. You cannot relax after the loan is made. You need to build a continuing relationship to assure renewal and availability of credit in the future. It has become another task of management. In the final analysis, the business is responsible for the borrowing relationship, and the banker is responsible for the lending relationship. The banker may be friendly, but he or she cannot be your friend. Borrowing is a competitive event. Those companies who are not willing to commit time, energy, and resources to building and managing their borrowing relationships will be the losers. Those companies that develop a strategy for banking, those companies that understand they are a seller and a buyer's market, will be the winners. Borrow only when it is profitable to borrow. Borrow when you can, not when you must. Commit yourself to preparation. Commit yourself to educating the banker. Commit yourself to selling your loan proposal, because that is how you will win the battle for the banker's yes.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also receive several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.